Hi, this is Griffin Stewart, co-founder of 5daydeal.com, where we've been able to donate over $500,000 to charity since 2014. And you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James.
This episode is sponsored by our friends at FreshBooks. The weather is better, and if you're a freelance photographer or a small business owner, you'd much rather be out in it shooting rather than dealing with paperwork, right? And that's where the cloud-based accounting software from FreshBooks comes in. To sign up for your 30-day free trial, go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About It section. Thank you, FreshBooks, for your support. Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, Episode 66. When a presidential campaign steals your photos. In this episode, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump is sued for copyright infringement. A photographer is shot dead at a gun range. UC Davis tries to erase photos from the internets. Zenit has three fast lenses in the works. A non-tripod thingy is being developed. And a camera drone hits a British Airways plane on approach to Heathrow Airport. All that and more in episode 66 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much for opening the show, Griffin. I greatly appreciate it, brother. Griffin Stewart, also known as the Traveling Designer, is an award-winning landscape and travel photographer who has visited over 50 countries, has worked with the BBC, has been featured by National Geographic and others, and along with his wife Valerie, co-founded 5-Day Deal. As a result of their efforts, since 2014, well over $500,000 US have been raised for a number of great charities through 5-Day Deal, and many of the brands you know and love participate in their photography bundles each year. Photographers save money, and a lot of money is earned for these very important charities. If you'd like to learn more, head on over to 5daydeal.com and check it all out. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 66 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as of this past week, that also includes Google Play, as we've been added to their directory. As always, we appreciate you telling your friends on social media and elsewhere and helping to get the word out about this show. So thank you for that. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. When you're running for president of the United States of America, you're not at all in charge of tasks like choosing which photos run in your campaign materials, nor where they're sourced from, of course. But as the saying goes, the buck stops with you. And when things go wrong, the responsibility is ultimately yours. And that's what Republican candidate for president Donald J. Trump is finding out as two photographers are suing him for using their image that they shot of a bald eagle many years ago. An image which was being sold on Trump's website as part of his marketing materials, and it wasn't licensed for such use. The image in question, shot approximately 36 years ago, was shot by photographers Robert Rosinski and Wendy Shaddle. In the lawsuit, the photo is described this way, quote, "The photograph captures a piercing, intimate, eye-to-eye moment with this majestic creature with near-perfect symmetry against a flawlessly sky-blue background," end quote. The Hollywood Reporter says that the photographers tried to settle this privately, but the Trump campaign just wasn't having it. So now it's literally a federal case as the photographers seek damages, citing direct and secondary copyright infringement. In the complaint, the photographers state that their photo has appeared on signs at Trump rallies, which is how they first became aware of this, and it was even being sold on Trump's website for $22 US as part of a two-pack of yard signs. Now, while they're no longer for sale on the website, that doesn't matter, of course. And if you're ever infringed on, just know that. I think a lot of people and companies figure that they can steal your image and use it until they get caught, and then when they do, they can go, oh, I'm sorry, and then just remove it, and all is good. But that's not how this works. You know, using a photo on a website, social media account, etc. is one thing, but selling items which use the photo, especially when it's a critical piece of that item, no bueno. Now you're essentially profiting off of that image. I mean, after all, why did you seek it out specifically and include it? So that's the primary infringement cited in their case, the yard signs which were being sold. Now, secondarily, they're claiming infringement due to the Trump campaign having shared that photo throughout their entire social media presence, along with encouraging people to share, retweet, and pin that particular image, leading to, quote, rampant viral infringement of plaintiffs' exclusive rights in their photograph, end quote. So think about that for a second. The Trump campaign took an image and decided for the photographers how it would be used. They've essentially devalued that photograph by putting it out there and encouraging the further distribution of that image, and that's not good. That removed the photographer's ability to market that image themselves, and someone else basically decided for them. Not cool. You know, if this happened to me, I know I'd be ticked off, and I don't care if it was my candidate for president or not. I might even switch candidates. All right, maybe not that, but you get the point here. Not cool. You just don't do that. Again, it's not the candidate's fault, and they likely didn't have any involvement in it, but they're still responsible. Their campaign, at least, right? But at any rate, it was done in their name, so it becomes their problem. I mean, it becomes a news story regardless. Now, there's no word on how much they're actually seeking for this infringement, but considering it's Donald J. Trump and as much money as he has, I think it's pretty safe to say that they're asking for a fairly high number. This photography duo officially copyrighted the photo with the U.S. Copyright Office way back in 1991, and as a result, they're not only entitled to actual damages, they're entitled to punitive damages as well. A federal judge, and this is where this is litigated in federal court, by the way, can award them up to $150,000 per infringement. I mean, that alone could be a lot of money. And it would be on the higher end of that if it's deemed to be, quote, willfully malicious, end quote. If you factor in the potential lost income due to the Trump campaign encouraging everyone to share the photo on social media and millions upon millions of people seeing it, this could be a very nice payday for the two photographers. I mean, after all, their copyright was infringed, so they deserve some money here. And if we find out what happens with this suit, we'll be sure to let you know, of course. Next. As you may recall, back in February 2016, we told you how Russian camera manufacturer Zenit was planning a comeback by taking on Leica in the luxury camera market. But to everyone's surprise, it's not a Zenit camera that we're seeing right now, but lenses. Very, very fast lenses, in fact. Their Zenitar 50mm f.95, a 50mm f1.2, and an 85mm f1.2. The 50mm f.95 will be available for Sony FE mirrorless bodies, has 9 elements in 8 groups, has 14 aperture blades in 2 levels amazingly, and should arrive sometime in 2017 for about $500 US. Now, their 50mm f1.2 is designed for full-frame DSLRs, and it's ginormous. It weighs in at 1,200 grams, that's about 2.6 pounds and change, and it's quite long at the moment, but Zenit is said to be working toward making it smaller by the time they release it later this year. Also designed for full-frame DSLRs, the Zenit 85mm f1.2 should be available in both Nikon and Canon mounts, has 9 elements in 7 groups, a large 82mm filter thread, and should be priced around $500 US when we see it sometime next year in 2017. Now that's one-third the price of Canon's 85-1.2, but keep in mind that these Zenitar lenses are manual focus only, don't have any of the electronics that you're used to in Canon and Nikon lenses, like image stabilization, VR, all that. So you have to keep that in mind. You know, this is all pretty interesting because they said that they were going after the luxury market that Leica dominates. Yet, by all indications so far, these lenses are not at all priced that way. So I find that interesting. Now, stay tuned because these look to be really solid lenses. They have a great history of quality. And once people have them in their hands, we'll see exactly how these things shake out. Nexki. I know I've done that before, but I wanted to say Nexki. Let's move on. As you may recall, back in November of 2011, campus police at the University of California, Davis pepper sprayed student protesters, and those images quickly went viral. You know, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone who hasn't seen images of that mustache police officer walking calmly down the line of student protesters as he deploys his orange-colored pepper spray all over their faces. Reports of this not only made the national news here in the United States, but all over the world, and I think everyone has seen these images by now. And if you haven't seen the actual photos, perhaps you've seen one of the hundreds of memes that have spawned from it. Well, if you're UC Davis and those in charge, that's not exactly the image that you want out there representing your institution, right? I mean, that's understandable. But hey, it's all over the internets. That's right, the internets. And once it's out there, it's out there, whether you like it or not. Working on the premise that they just couldn't let this be, the school reportedly contracted with outside entities in an effort to scrub this event from anywhere it may be online. Okay, that's ridiculous, but companies actually do exist that claim it's possible. And guess what? For the most part, it's not. Just as anyone promising you that they can make you the number one search result in Google for a particular keyword is also selling you some snake oil. What's really funny is that this event was in the past, a place that you think that UC Davis would want it to be, right? But thanks to an expose by the Sacramento Bee, revelations of their attempts to rewrite history has triggered the dreaded Streisand effect. Now, you may recall that back in 2003, actress Barbra Streisand tried to keep photos of her mansion out of the public eye, but actually ensured that millions of people would see it thanks to her efforts. So UC Davis tried to get these photos removed and accidentally made sure that, once again, a lot of people would see them. Good job, right? Way to go. Now, according to that newspaper, amazingly, UC Davis threw $175,000 US at various reputation firms, but a simple Google search to this day instantly finds the photos, so it wasn't exactly money well spent now, was it? Not at all. Documents recently uncovered by the newspaper reveal the dealings with these consultants, saying that the goal was the, quote, eradication of references to the pepper spray incident in search results on Google for the university and the chancellor, end quote. The chancellor they're referring to is Linda P.B. Katehi. P.B. I wonder what that stands for. Can't possibly be peanut butter, right? Peanut butter. That sounds pretty good. Okay, let's pretend that did not happen and just move along. What do you say? Chancellor Katehi is actually under pressure to resign from her job for completely unrelated matters, and this definitely is not helping her. UC Davis isn't at all denying the allegations, and in fact is actually defending it, saying, quote, "We have worked to ensure that the reputation of the university, which the chancellor leads, is fairly portrayed. We wanted to promote and advance the important teaching, research, and public service done by our students, faculty, and staff, which is the core mission of our university," end quote. All right, I get that. That makes a lot of sense. They wanted to move on from this incident and not have this ugly part of the school's history stain its reputation. I think we all understand that. But that might have been something to think about before you went ahead and pepper sprayed your students. Just a thought. Next. As we always say here on the podcast, thanks to the amazing technology available to us, sharing our photos is so easy. And so is running your business if you use FreshBooks. Whether you make your money with photography or you have another small business, you'd rather be shooting and editing your photos than dealing with paperwork, right? I know I would. Well, FreshBooks solves this problem by making it incredibly fast and easy. Their amazingly simple cloud-based invoicing solution keeps your cash flow details all in one place so you know exactly who you've invoiced, who's paid, who hasn't, and what your income is. And their FreshBooks mobile app is awesome. It lets you take pics of your receipt and organize them later so you have them all ready to go come tax time. Do yourself a favor and check out FreshBooks. You'll be more prepared, less stressed, and you can get back to enjoying your life and doing what you love most. Amazingly, on average, FreshBooks users get paid a full 2 weeks faster when accepting online payments. They cut 2 days a month of administrative tasks, and they double the revenue in the first 24 months. More time shooting means more time to make money rather than shuffling papers. And right now, FreshBooks is offering a free 30-day trial to our listeners. Just go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thank you so much, FreshBooks. This week, I was honored to be included in one of my favorite photography podcasts, This Week in Photo. I've been listening to Frederick Van Johnson and the others for many, many years. One of my inspirations in doing a photography podcast myself. So I was honored to co-host episode 461 with the host, Frederick Van Johnson, and my good friend Martin Bailey. And that's going to be available here in the next couple days. So make sure you go to thisweekinphoto.com. Look for episode 461. We had such a great time, and I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. It's going to be available, of course, as an audio podcast, but you could also go online, like I said, thisweekinphoto.com, or on YouTube and look for the This Week in Photo channel. And I think it's actually going to be more enjoyable to watch us than actually listen. But if you can only listen to it, that'll be fun too. You'll have a great time. So don't forget to check that out. I was so honored to have been asked to be part of that. And you're going to be seeing us all together in the future on This Week in Photo. So definitely check that out. Thank you. Picture a tripod. Okay, got it? Now get that image out of your head, because a company called Edelkrone, known for its camera sliders, jibs, and other cool gear for photographers and filmmakers, has a really cool product that's unlike anything that you've used before. And it's called Stand Plus. While it has a three-legged base for stability, those legs lie flat, unlike a tripod. Your camera quickly mounts to the unit, and from then on, you can move your camera up and down, and it just stays there. It's pretty darn awesome. Now, this won't completely replace your tripod, as the rolling base is meant for a flat surface. So this isn't at all going to be your go-to for shooting on uneven ground. So if you shoot a lot of landscapes, this is not your first choice. But if you do a lot of portraiture, or otherwise are on flat surfaces, and desire a way to quickly and easily move your camera from down low to eye level, this would fit the bill nicely. Now, it's not available just yet, and there's no word on how much it's going to cost. But I can see a lot of people wanting to pick one of these up, especially if you're tired of levers and knobs and just want to get the darn camera in the right position and get back to shooting. And we all know how frustrating it is to have your camera all set and level, and then you want to change the height, so you grab one leg and adjust it, then you grab another and adjust that as well, then the third, and after all that nonsense, now it's time to consult with your friend the bubble level and mess around with the legs once again so you're not shooting Dutch angles. You get the point here. A tripod has a time investment associated with it pretty much every time you break it out. The Stand Plus doesn't, and that's its biggest selling point, I believe. So if this thing comes in fairly pricey, and I think it's going to, I think a lot of people are going to weigh that versus the time and frustration savings and decide on whether or not it's for them. And I guess it depends on what kind of photography they do, of course. If you're shooting in the outdoors a lot, this is definitely not going to be the one for you. Next. I really dislike having to do stories like this next one, but they're really important and maybe, just maybe, will help save someone's life. The last thing that you think is going to happen when you head out to take photos one day is to never return to your family. But sadly, that's what happened to 30-year-old U.S. Army veteran Adam Malaby in Sutton, Alaska this past weekend. The photographer was photographing others shooting guns at a makeshift shooting range known to locals as the Gravel Pits, when he reportedly got between those he was photographing and others who were firing their weapons, and he was shot dead. According to Alaska state troopers, Malaby was shot by a .40 caliber bullet as he aimed his camera at others shooting their guns there at the range. Now, CPR was being administered to him as they arrived. He was medevaced to Providence Medical Center in Anchorage, where he was subsequently pronounced dead on arrival. And it's very, very sad. A local resident there named Dylan Barron says that there's rarely a firing line established at the range, and quote, "I've had cases where people have fired guns in my direction from behind me," end quote. Now, it's unclear as to whether or not he knew how dangerous it was going to be there, but the lesson here is that as photographers, it's critical that you maintain situational awareness. You need to know what threats there are to your safety at all times, to the extent possible, of course. We've talked so many times here on the show about how photographers have been run over by trains that they didn't see nor hear, have been assaulted, and even shot while practicing their photography. So please be mindful of your surroundings as you shoot, and especially if you're near people shooting guns, using crossbows, or anything else that can strike you and kill you. Now, there in Alaska, the local community council apparently had met earlier in the weekend before this incident took place to discuss the gravel pits and what they could do about them, but unfortunately, it was too late for Adam Malaby. Gone much too soon, brother. R.I.P. Next. Countless times here on the show, we've talked about how many hundreds of times each and every year, camera drones operated by people with more money than sense shun the rules and fly dangerously close to aircraft that are either taken off or landing, and some have flown at altitude, believe it or not. Now, while the worst case scenario hasn't happened yet, this past weekend near London's incredibly busy Heathrow Airport, a British Airways pilot reports that at 1250 BST, the Airbus A320 that he was piloting with 132 passengers and 5 crew on board struck what he and his co-pilot believed to have been a camera drone. An investigation has been launched, but thus far no arrests have been made. But when they find that guy, and it usually is a guy, let's admit, he is in deep, deep doo-doo, let me tell you. Now, Steve Landelis, flight safety specialist for the British Airline Pilots Association, that's BALPA, told The Guardian, quote, "You end up with very high-velocity bits of metal going anywhere they like. That could be through fuel tanks, through hydraulic lines, and even into the cabin. Losing the engine is not going to cause an aircraft to crash because they are designed to fly with one engine down, but an unconfined engine failure is going to be different every time. That could be very serious indeed." End quote. He also said that current computer models show that a drone could easily penetrate an airliner's windscreen and contribute to bringing down the aircraft, and it would only be a matter of time before this happened. That's pretty scary, you've got to admit. He said, quote, "The first thing we want to do is get a drone, or at least the critical parts of a drone, flying at a windscreen of an aircraft. The indications so far with computer modeling are that you'll end up with penetration of a windscreen. One possibility is that the battery smashes the windscreen and the inside layer of the windscreen shatters, and you'll end up with lots of glass in the cockpit, probably moving at quite high speed. As a pilot, I don't want to be sitting there when that's going on." End quote. He'd like to see more education and enforcement of the rules, but what do you do about the stupid people out there? They're going to throw caution to the wind, assume nothing bad will happen, and risk the lives of hundreds of people. And for what? So they can get video of airliners that they could never possibly use because that proves they broke the law? I mean, it is completely pointless and unnecessary. Now, these kind of people, remember, they're stupid. Don't think about these kind of things. And it's the stupid people, like I said, that you've got to worry about. They're just too dumb to understand that they're messing with human life here. You know, we always talk about big commercial jets, but what about the smaller aircraft with perhaps a private pilot and his family on board? A drone impacting a Cessna's windshield can't possibly have a good outcome, I'm thinking. Someday, if a drone causes a plane to crash, especially a commercial airliner, watch for an immediate grounding of drones and the public to demand incredibly strict regulations. You know, like Mama always said, this is why we can't have nice things. And you know what? I would not want to be the drone pilot responsible for killing one person, let alone a couple of hundred. I can't even imagine that. That is so horrific. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 66 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, go ahead and email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, and I hope you do, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. And if you'd like to support the show, head on over to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter Petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section for your 30-day free trial. And don't forget to check me out on This Week in Photo, episode 461. Head on over to thisweekinphoto.com. It should be up Thursday or Friday of this week as I record this, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. We had a lot of fun, Frederick, Mark, and I. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 67. Well, it's f/8 2/50 of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.